Network, hello. I am back. I am back with an old friend. A guy I was stationed with at MacDill Air Force Base. He was a active duty guy, not a smart reservist like me. And then he decided to be done with the KC-135 and move on to Las Vegas, where he flew remote control airplanes, where his life kind of changed a little bit. And that's what we're talking about. That's kind of this series of podcasts that we're going to discuss. The side hustle. Pilots doing stuff outside of piloting. The guy that we're going to talk to today is George Moore. George was KC-135 pilot, RPA guy, and then came back to the KC-135. In that time frame, he started a company called QuickJet, which he's had some pretty massive success with out of Las Vegas. He's going to talk to you a lot more about that, and we're just going to have a conversation, two bros talking about how they got to where they are today. George, welcome. We're really glad to have you on the Pilot Network podcast.
It's good to be here. I'm always a pleasure. Always a pleasure hanging out with a buddy.
Yeah, and it's been a while. It's been a while. In fact, I'm in Wisconsin here in my new house, and if we're able to release this video on the interwebs, people will see I'm speaking from my closet, which is my current and temporary recording studio. George is on the other side of the country in California, and he jumped on. We were chatting, and we decided, you know what would be great? Let's talk about how we get from where George and I were just some 10, 15 years ago being in pilot training going, man, I'm excited to be here. I just want to fly airplanes. I mean, I don't know about you, but that was me. To how we got here today. So why don't you start off with, let's start off with the days maybe leading up to that graduation from the illustrious Air Force Academy onto kind of how things evolved after that.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I'm an Air Force Academy dude, class of 06, and you know, I was that guy going to pilot training, sold my minivan with 240,000 miles on it, bought a brand new Corvette. You know, I'm ready to be an Air Force pilot, right? So, you know, go to pilot training. I always wanted heavies. I didn't want to fly fighters. And I literally based my decision on where I wanted to live. Voila, I got sunny Tampa, Florida as my first assignment.
That's a smart man. That's aviation and real estate, right? Location, location,
oh, God,
location.
Yes. Well, God, yes. So, yeah, living in Tampa, Florida, brand new co-pilot, you know, got crushed with deployments, brand new co-pilot, single guy, deployed a lot, got a lot of TDYs, a lot of great deployments, a few less than enthusiastic ones, naturally, but I had a really great, and that's the best word I can describe it, great first assignment. Made a lot of great dudes like you, Adam, a lot of, because we paired with the reservists, a lot of guys over there on the reserve side and active duty side. Yeah, my first assignment was all about the Air Force. And it's just a kind of amazing how as your career grows from the young, motivated Air Force pilot, and while still motivated, you see how your career goes a certain direction and someone else's career goes a certain direction. And you're like, you know, maybe I can do something besides this Air Force thing because it doesn't look like I'm Mr. Top 10% going to be a general. And then you see some things happen to your buddies. For example, I had a good guy deployed with, you know him, his name's Joe Leeper, and the Air Force didn't want him anymore. And that made me very, very upset. Very good pilot, there to fly the mission, does his job, does it correctly. And it's just, the way it was described to me is how they rack and stack our paperwork and they draw a line and everyone beneath that line has to go. And that makes me upset.
Yeah. Confusing too.
It's confusing. And it's like very Hunger Games-ish. You're competing against, like, you, no joke, your resume is competing against everyone else. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, I remember distinctly saying this on one deployment. And my degree was operations research, so I use mathematics, probability, statistics to make business decisions. It's inherently what my major was. So while deployed over Afghanistan, flying a combat mission, I pull out my little laptop and I go, you know what? I wonder if we could start our own airline. And like, you know, you get your data on what it costs to operate an aircraft and what it costs to, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And you run the numbers and you're like, well, you know what? Based on these numbers, it could work. So then you got to figure out how it works for you, right? It's like, well, you know, I'm not going to be like Southwest Airlines, right? They started with three Boeing 737s and all they did was work with San Antonio, Dallas, and I think Houston. Only three cities they service, like back in the 70s. And look at Southwest today. Yeah. They started from nothing. So I'm sitting here, it's like, well, all I need is one airplane. So when they came to my next assignment, they're like, hey, well, you know, we got this RPA thing. You're going to have to fly remote control airplanes. And what standard Air Force pilot wants to fly a remote control airplane? Not really anybody.
No, not a ton of them.
So my kind of deal was like, hey, listen, I will fly RPAs if you send me to Las Vegas. And this spears you to do a couple other things. Like, I was never the guy that wanted to get my master's degree, but you have to tell yourself, you're like, well, how in the heck do you start a business? So go to Oklahoma State University online, of course, and got their master's.
Go Pokes, man. Go Pokes, buddy.
And I got my master's degree in business with a focus on entrepreneurship. Got it done in a year and a half. Wow. So, and I mean, I'm, you know, a single dude, so at the time, so I can crush out three or four classes during the semester.
I was going to say, amazing. I was going to say, you didn't have those little ones running around at that time, or there's no way that you
never could have done it. I got a 3-year-old and 1-year-old now. Would be impossible.
What's your 1-year-old's birthday? Because we have a 1-year-old at home too.
July 27th.
Okay. So coming up on
two.
Two? Yeah,
one and right. a half now.
Yeah, we've got the we got the 1-year-old who just turned one. So
there you go.
We're not quite there yet.
Yeah. So you talk about a handful.
Yeah.
Talk about a handful.
I understand that.
Oh, me and you both, brother. So yeah, man, it's just imagine how you learn how to start a business, and then next thing you know, it's like really happening. Like, you go to your buddy who's a lawyer, like, hey man, can you start my LLC for me? Boom, you got an LLC for your business. And then you're looking around and you got to put all these things together because you got to write a business plan. You've got to make sure your business plan looks good. Then you got to send your resume to banks because you can't just buy a $500,000 to $2 million aircraft on a Air Force pilot's budget. That
would be a challenge.
Yeah. So it's amazing all those things together while you're also doing your Air Force job. So yeah, as I moved to Vegas, you know, I learned how to fly an RPA, and I mean, it's easier but harder at the same time. You know, if you want to compare KC-135s to flying a remote control airplane,
sure.
It's a, you know, things you don't have to deal with versus things you do have to deal with. And to be honest, as much as I love the KC-135, came back to the KC-135 and enjoy it, I'll probably go back to RPAs after this.
Really? Why? Yeah. Why that movement back? Just
so. As aircraft commander, you think about the things you have to deal with as an aircraft commander and now a husband, father of two. Okay, I didn't deploy once as an RPA pilot. And it's amazing. You're like, you're sitting in that meeting and, you know, they tell you you don't have to deploy that much, but you're sitting here like, sure, they told me I wouldn't deploy that much. And, you know, I did all these deployments. And, like, you go in your unit and your commander, like, no joke, tells you, hey, you are not deployable. You are not deployable. And I was like, you ever watch that, like, commercial with that Native American on the side of the road and they throw trash at him and he sheds a single tear?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was like that Native American. I was like, what? I'm never going to deploy again. This is amazing. So that fosters you in an ability to start your own business
because you're
not going to be gone all the time. All this stuff. And like, to be honest, this probably business would have not been able to start up if I was in Casey.
Yeah.
Because you got to be there. You got to be hands on.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because so on this last deployment that I just went on for the guard, I thought, and I'm sure you probably thought this at times too, as you started to develop ideas in your head of what was going to work, what might not work, what you wanted to do. Hey, if I go on this deployment as crew, I do have a lot of free time. Most people think you're constantly humping. Well, no, you fly, even if you fly a lot, you still have some downtime. Not a ton, but you still have some downtime because you're not going into an office. You don't have any of those restrictions.
Yes.
What I also noticed was how challenging it is to continually keep up with whatever. Let's say you have a business partner like I do with Matt for TPN. It's challenging to keep in contact with each other. And after that cycle goes a couple of weeks, you start to lose some momentum that you had built up. And I totally understand the being at home thing, even though your schedule's a little bit tighter at that point and you have more requirements, you almost have to have Jocko Willink, who, for those guys out there who are listening and gals who are listening, Jocko Willink, Navy SEAL, Tim Ferriss calls him one of the most badass people on the planet. I've listened to a few of his podcasts, and one of the things that I take away from him is discipline equals freedom. That's one of his famous quotes. And in our world that we're in right now, sitting back home, when we're disciplined and we stick to that schedule, our freedom opens up. Like, I realize that if I do my work by the schedule that I created for myself, I have way more free time than I've ever had before. It's kind of like having a budget within your home. You end up giving yourself a pay raise, right? So I totally agree with you, man, that it's amazing how much more freedom, time, and control you had once you kind of removed that deployed status. And there are some guys on the network who've said, you know, you shouldn't be saying that because you're serving your country, serving Uncle Sam. I can speak for George and myself. We've done it many, many times. I have a little over 2.5 years in the Middle East. We get it. We do get it. But there are times where you're going, okay, you know what? Maybe it's somebody else's turn.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up, man. So talking from bro to bro.
Sure.
So I've been in the Air Force coming up on 12 years right now. And I can't remember exactly what sparked the conversation, but a guy was like, well, you know, don't you owe the Air Force, or don't you owe, you know, somebody something? I was like, man, I've been deployed over 2 years of my life, and I've killed 3 terrorists in the service of my people. Now, what do I owe people now? What do I really owe people now?
No, and
even, it's hard to.
By the book, even by the book that we signed on to, right?
Yeah.
A 10-year commitment after pilot training completion, right?
Yeah.
So 11 and a half years ish, 11 years, whatever the number is for individuals, it varies.
Yep.
If that's what people are saying, hey, why aren't you committed? Well, I've served my commitment. Now it's my choice. And what I think people get, they mix up with us, is they don't think we love our country anymore.
And it's amazing.
Yeah. And they said, if you want to swap shoes, and I get it. Hey, we're pilots. We do have it better than a lot of other AFSCs and a lot of other MOSs. We are lucky in a way that we are top of the heap in a lot of aspects.
True.
We've also worked to get to that level, and some of us have worked harder than George and I have, and have gotten to levels that are further along than we've gotten to.
True.
And what I think is the best way to go about all of this is, hey, mutual respect for every job that's out there. Whether you're a towel giver outer in the gym or a pilot, it don't matter. Respect. And realize that, hey, that guy's deployed, and maybe he's not flying a combat mission, not like tanker guys really are, but I'm talking like he's not a Viper guy getting shot at, or an A-10 guy. Yeah. But you know what? He's still away from his family, away from his friends, away from what he cares about. And he's out there doing a job that he doesn't necessarily really want to do. Where the A-10 guy at least is getting to shoot things or go do what he loves. So we all play our part. I think that's a big key. And once you do it, you're done. Once your commitment's up, there's no more. If you decide to go back and keep doing it, I say it's like voting. You have a right then to complain. Like, if you voted with yes, then you know what? You can complain all you want, but just remember, you still got to go do the dirty work. You got to do
it. There it is.
And I'm one of the big complainers, so I will say. So
I will say I am quite the complainer.
We'll jump all over the place, but I wanted to get back because how are you? So you're an interesting cat. With you are a military pilot, but you got interested in the business side of aviation. It's not like you fly your own airplane charter around, you know, that's not what you do. So how did you first get interested? Let's talk about how you first got interested in aviation as a pilot yourself. And then let's talk about how you got interested in being, I don't know if you ever played the Nintendo game Aerobiz. From like 1994, which I've beaten several times, so maybe I should open my airline. How do we get interested in becoming a military pilot, and then how do we become the mogul in the airline industry?
Well, I tell you what, my dad was an air traffic controller for about 35 years. So I'd always been around aviation. That being said, I didn't know a single pilot growing up.
Wow.
I'd never been in an airplane. I've gone to, growing up in Dallas, I'd gone to the American Airlines Museum. And my dad had two friends that were in the Air Force, but they were all retired while I knew them. So I didn't, no one said, oh, you need to join the Air Force to me. Inherently, what happened was what got me to the Air Force Academy was I had a football recruiter come to me and say, hey, the Air Force Academy would really like to recruit you. And at the time, my sister was going to Stanford, and she was always the smartest one. So I went on the Princeton Review, and that year, the Air Force Academy was ranked higher academically than Stanford. So I said, I'll go to the Air Force Academy so I can be smarter than my
sister. Perfect.
Yeah, so that's how I got to the Air Force.
Little Academy. Sibling rivalry. I like that, it.
No, man. It's real. I told her to her face, too, so she knows. And then at the Air Force Academy, everyone wants to be most people will go there to want to be a pilot. And there was a time where I wanted to be a combat rescue officer.
Okay.
Because the young 19, 20-year-old George saw a combat rescue officer walk in with his red beret and fancy, cool-looking flight suit, and the dude was the baddest guy in the room, right? I had a conversation with my dad, and I was like, hey, Dad, you know, I can do this pilot thing, or I can be a bad combat rescue officer. And he goes, all right, son, once you're done being a combat rescue officer, what you going to do after that?
Yeah. What's the next move?
Like, what's your next move? You ain't going to be a combat rescue officer forever. And I was like, well, I guess you got a good point there. So I decided to become a pilot. And I'd always like, you know, almost every single kid you know likes airplanes.
Yeah, at some point, yeah.
At some point, they're like, oh, that's kind of cool. So yep. I was like, you know, I'll go be off. It was between a pilot or a scientific analyst based on my major. So I decided pilot. And enjoyed pilot training. Pilot training, as if you want to talk about where I stood in pilot training, I mean, I wasn't the bottom of guy, but I wasn't the number one guy. I got inherently my second choice, which was Tampa, Florida, from pilot training.
Where was your first choice? Do you remember?
My first choice was KC-10s to Travis Air Force Base.
Okay.
And that's because my sister lived there.
Okay.
And that was the only reason I wanted to go there, is because I was going to be next to my sister.
Okay. Well, I think you got a pretty good deal.
I think I lucked out on that
one. You lucked out. Well, you met me, so of course you lucked out.
Of course. The glass is full on that aspect.
Well, at least you got your second choice. I got my 11th.
There you go.
You know what? Dudes who don't remember where it fell in their class, like what choice they got, you know, that's because they actually probably did well enough where they got their top five and they were like, oh, no big deal. Or they got their first choice. The guys who got near the bottom and remember it, like me. Yeah, because I had one bad week. I had one bad week in T1s. Yeah, it just so happened that it was my nav check, which is a whole ridiculous story that could take up way too much of your time, so we won't even get into it. Let's just put it this way.
I don't want to talk about it.
Let's just put it this way. I went from, hey, I'm going to get the requested airplane that I wanted in my drop, which was an HC-130, to the KC-135 in McConnell, which, looking back on it, I probably wouldn't be back home in Milwaukee, and I definitely wouldn't have started the Pilot Network had I not gotten that particular assignment. So, yeah.
There you go.
Luck, fate, whatever you want to call it, has a funny way of working itself out. So football player George decides, I'm going to go to Air Force Academy, smarter than my sister, play a few years, go fly airplanes instead of be a combat rescue officer, which I think you probably would have done okay on that front, too. Those guys, they tend to do okay after the military nowadays.
I imagine so, but in my head, young guy, no one knew what you did after that, right? Yep. You know what to do after being a pilot.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah. Nobody knows. You write your book, you start your leadership course, and you consult for $20,000 a day or something crazy that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then it happens, you get this RPA thing, and you're thinking, hey, I'm going to start my business, but obviously, the entrepreneurial spirit was with you the whole time. When did it really kick in when you realized you're just going, was it a money-driven thing? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but what was what was the driving force, and when did all of a sudden the blinders come off where it's no more, I'm driving ahead to be Mr. Air Force, but I'm driving ahead to be Mr. Well-Rounded Businessman, Officer, Pilot, Well-Rounded George.
So I've always been, as I look back and talk to my parents, a type A type of person where I'm always trying to do something. I'm just always trying to do something, whether it's money-driven or ambition-driven or quality of life-driven or something like that. So I had the initial, we could start our own airline, which turns into, I don't really want to start my own airline. Why don't I just buy one airplane and I start my aircraft business, and which molds into, well, as I'm doing my business degree, molds into, well, you know, let's buy an airplane and start a business. And if that works, it can grow into something special. Or I have my own airplane that I can fly around on my own spare time, and I have my own personal airplane.
Sure.
Is where it starts,
right? Yeah.
From there, the ambition side of it comes into, oh man, can you really do it? Like, you almost ask in your head, like, I wonder if I can do it. And I'll tell you, my biggest aha moment was about starting my business. Then I started actual operations. And then about 15 months into my operation, you break even for the first time. And you're sitting here and I was like, did I just make $150 in profit?
Yeah.
And like $150 seems like nothing. But after like the first time, you're like, oh crap, I better cover all these expenses I have. So like, okay, I covered a little more this month and I covered a little this month. And that 1 month where you just made, you didn't lose any money. You made some money that you could put in your pocket and you're like, I did it. Like, you in your head, you're like, I did it. I am victorious. I started something. When everyone tells you, like, what do they tell you? 7 out of 10 businesses fail in the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. You have the people that will tell you, no, man, you can't do that. You're active duty starting a business. No, you can't do that. I was flying with a sensor operator and I was like, yeah, I started this business and, you know, I'm flying people in this King Air. And he looked me in my eye and he said, I would never fly in your airplane. And I looked him back in his eye and I was like, you're not my client.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but yeah, like, you have people that tell you, and like, you know, you have the supporters too, but you got people that are in your head like, hey man, I wouldn't do that. You know, airlines fail, right? Like, no man, I wouldn't do that. You know, yada yada yada.
So
and then you actually do it.
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yes, I
gotta interrupt you because, all right,
go ahead.
I had the same thing happen to me, and I'll bring his name up. I bring him up every now and again into these podcasts. This guy Chris, I used to fly Beach 1900s without in Afghanistan, contract work.
Yeah.
Chris is a very good friend of mine. And when I first did the TPN thing, because, yeah, I was just starting up trying to get, all I was trying to do is find guys who I knew who worked at the airlines so I could get letters of recommendation. And I was scared to ask for letters of recommendation, or not scared, but I didn't know how to do it correctly. You know what I mean? Yeah. So what I did was I found, I was looking for guys from FedEx because that was my top choice. People who've listened to the podcast have heard that a bunch of times. And so I ended up putting every dude I knew on Facebook as a pilot into the group. You were probably one of the original.
I was there at the beginning, my man.
You were one of the original 390. And so here's the best part of the whole thing. I remember I put all these people together. I'm like, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, I'm going to put you in this group, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. This is kind of what my idea is. And he goes, that is so stupid. And I said, oh, well, what do you think? What do you think it's stupid? And he goes, who's going to look at that shit? He's like, there's plenty of forums online that you can get all that stuff. And I said, yeah, but you don't know who anybody is. It's like, you know, Deep Ball 69 is the guy writing something. It's like George or Adam or somebody else that you actually can know. Yeah. And he goes, well, whatever. He's like, good luck with that. It ain't going to work. About a year ago, he wrote me and he goes, hey, remember, and I think he said this more than once. He said, hey, remember when I told you that the Pilot Network thing was stupid? He goes, I'm an idiot. Don't ever listen to me again. So he flies with me at the airline. So he's a great guy. And he's done, he was a former tactical party for the Air Force before he became a pilot. So he kind of did a little bit of what you almost thought about doing. So, so have you ever had anybody come back and say, hey man, you know what? You were right. I was wrong. Well done.
Anybody say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you made it. Good job. So people that I keep in touch with, like, you know, my close friends, they were always supported. None of them ever said anything bad. I do have some people that, like, it's like, when I say, oh yeah, I'm still doing this thing, and you know, I make some money, and they go, oh, huh. Like, you could tell they're like, oh, I didn't think he was going to do it. But I haven't had that moment where someone's like, hey, dude, I'm sorry I told you weren't going to make it. I haven't had that happen.
Well, you know what? I don't think you don't necessarily need it. I do. I have an ego issue. So
yeah, I got ego. Every pilot has an ego problem.
Yeah, there's the ones who admit it and then the ones who just lie about it.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
With kind of going down that road and as an entrepreneur, and I do believe that most pilots out there are entrepreneurial in a way or another. In fact, most people in one way or another. I mean, for instance, my wife was a school teacher for 6 years and then she left that to be a stay-at-home mom. But at the same time, she's on the side. She does a small music business for little children and infants that she loves doing. It's really small and it's not about the money. She wants to do that because she misses that part of it.
Yes.
So I think that a lot of us in different ways are entrepreneurial, whether it's starting your own business, franchise, philanthropy, whatever the case might be. And I want to know, what is the big enjoyment factor that you have as being the CEO of what I would call a successful startup company, because you are not losing money. And that's what I think most people don't realize. It's not about how much you make. It's about how much you don't lose in the financial world that makes you a success. Oh, yeah. And then how much you truly enjoy what you're doing that makes it the legitimate success that you can show to everybody else. So what's your big enjoyments and takeaways?
My biggest enjoyment is when like a mission happens. Let me tell you in story form what I enjoy about it. So as you can imagine, the flying part's the easiest part of it. If I ever have to fly, I got two pilots that fly for me. But as far as my enjoyment, so there I am, interlinked Turkey, flying combat sorties into, you know, God knows where. And thank God I have internet access so I can coordinate flights. So client calls me, says, hey man, I really want to go skiing in Park City, Utah next weekend. From there I go, okay, got to coordinate with pilot, got to check weather, got to put all this together, got to coordinate the limousine to pick them up at the airport to drive them up to the mountain, got to coordinate all the stuff, put it all together. Boom. Pilot can do it. Aircraft's available. Aircraft's working. I fuel up the aircraft. All comes together. Boom. They show up. They take off. Silence. I'm sitting there in Incirlik, Turkey, just like, okay, I hope everything's going fine. I hope there's no turbulence. I hope they land safely. I hope they land and there's no maintenance problems.
For sure.
I finally get that call. Hey, buddy. Hey, George. We just landed. The clients are in the limo headed to the mountain with their ski stuff. Aircraft's fine. I'm buttoning it up. I'm going to that hotel that you reserved for me. They land, hang up phone. I start doing my victory dance. Yeah, we just did it. And like that part of it is awesome. Other aspects, like I got a client that wants to buy into QuickJet and wants to fly in my King Air. You know, go meet client at the aircraft. Tell them all the glorious things about flying private with George Moore in his airplane. They go, oh my gosh, this is cool. Let's put the contract together. I just have a new client. That's another victory. I get in the car, do my victory dance. Just add another victory. Yeah. So it's like the little wins that come together to make it happen. I really enjoy that aspect of it. So yeah, like I said, I started an aircraft business, but it's not because I wanted to fly. It's because I like managing a business. I like putting an operation together. I like the small victories that come together.
Absolutely.
And all that kind of stuff is what I really enjoy.
That's what Gary Vaynerchuk always said. Everybody's a marketing company, right? That's what we all really are. And then you go into whatever speciality you really are. And I think I love what you're doing. In fact, for those of you who don't know QuickJet or George personally or have not heard of him, go check his stuff out on Facebook. Just for one reason, to go check it out at the Facebook page. And this is why I'm telling people right now about this. So when I was looking at kind of how things were developing, I looked and there's a couple reviews, right? First of all, it says 5-star reviews, which is better than the Pilot Network page. We have 1 4-star review. I have no idea how we got 4 stars. Give us 1 star, man. 4 stars. Come on. Like,
come on,
4 stars and there's no review. Come on, man. But so I look and I said, oh, 5 stars. I go, that's pretty cool. You know, I wonder how many, like 2 reviews or something. There's 14 reviews on there. There's 14. That means 14 people said 5-star things about QuickJet. And what that's saying is, to me, if you're going out to start your side hustle, if you make it about the client first and the person that you are, their customer first, I mean, I really believe this. This is why we are so into what we do at the Pilot Network about, hey, we want to keep it free. The Facebook group, we want to keep all this, a lot of the stuff we do free for members. Now we have to create some revenue to maintain all the stuff that we do as the Pilot Network. But we want to keep the crux and the critical stuff free out there for everybody to enjoy and take and learn. And I think when you make it about the client or the customer at the very end, or as the way I look at it, this is just fellow bros and sisters helping each other out in the aviation industry. For you, it's delivering that kind of high-end service to somebody that really wants it, and you're doing a better job than the next guy. And to me, that's success. And I think my hat's off, because I know I would have never been it. Now, I could have probably done like an ultra low cost carrier. Hey, I'll fly you up to Park City on a Cessna 150 and we'll do, you know, like 15 trips and 10 stops. But yeah, what you're doing is pretty cool stuff. And I think, go ahead.
So, and I like how you said it's about the client. It's also about being open and honest with your client too. Like, I'll be sitting there painting a picture for my client in my airplane, and I'll say, just so you know, I'm not a Gulfstream 650. Okay. If you want that type of lifestyle, that's going to cost you money. But I'm also not, you know, a low-budget airline. We're above that. You know what we're for? We're for the person that needs 4 first-class tickets to fly somewhere, because that's my budget per person. It's like buying 4 first-class tickets, and that's what I give you. So I found the beauty of the way I've operated and how I've grown in business is I know exactly what my client looks like, smells like, talks like, budget level, and I can immediately meet someone or talk to someone, and everyone wants to fly in a private airplane, right? Like,
oh, of course,
for the most part, everyone's like, hey, fly private? Yeah, but only P. Diddy and Donald Trump get to do that. Yeah. Not true. But you look at someone and you're like, okay, listen, I know you'd love to fly private with me, but I love you, buddy. You can't afford it.
Sure.
And then there's a person that's, I have one client, business owner, owns his own jet, does not need me. He owns a jet that can get him from Las Vegas to Korea. The only reason he has me is when his jet's broken. He needs to fly to one of his 3 houses along the California coast. The only reason. So for me, I'm like pennies on the dollar to what he spends on his jet.
Sure. Yeah.
My real clients, all my other clients are doctors. It's like every single one's a doctor. And they all make between, you know, the high 200s to the low $400,000 a year. And while they can't afford their own, like, Gulfstream or, you know, charter every day, they can't afford to pitter patter around 3 or 4 times a year in a King Air 90.
Sure. And so, you know what else is really nice, that you're doing the GA and the professional pilots a service by keeping some of those doctors out of cockpits.
Yeah, dude.
For our doctors who know how to fly well and have the experience, we kid. But you know who we're talking about. There's enough of them out there that are a little scary to everybody. And that goes for a lot of GA guys. I think that's another side. So a little bit of technicality stuff here. As a charter operator, do you operate under the 135 rules or 91, or do you both?
So that's the word you've been dropping, charter. I am not a charter. I operate under Part 91. And what I do is I do fractional ownership.
Ah, okay. Good.
So I can only have up to 16 clients if I wanted to. But according to the FAA, I can have up to 16s, and I sell 1/16th ownership of my King Air to people. They have operational control, and we share pilots, which is, you know, Nick or Ryan are my pilots. And what we do is they pay me a monthly fee to be a part of QuickJet. And then every time we go fly, I'll be like, hey, dude, the aircraft's available. Can Ryan fly for you? Ryan's available. And I kind of just put the pieces together and go on the trips, and they pay me an hourly rate. But they have, legally speaking, they have operational control, and it's all in the documentation, right? We got to fill out contracts and put everything together, so it's all legally correct and stuff like that. And half the battle is just letting them know, like, for example, I have a doctor that wanted to go to Jackson Hole for a ski trip because it's the big ski season's ending, right?
Yep.
So I say, just so you know, you have operational control of the aircraft. So when you go out there, if it starts raining, snowing, and blizzarding, and you need to put the aircraft in the hangar, and that's your responsibility. If you choose not to, and something happens to the aircraft, that is on you. So it's a lot about what people don't understand about starting a business, too, is the legal ramifications and how you put it together in the government's eyes, too.
Yeah.
So
especially in that world, because I flew Part 135 and 91 for a charter operator, and they were responsible for everything. the airplane.
Yes, 135, they have sole operational control, and they're responsible. Part 91's a little different story.
And we used to fly. It was interesting, actually, both at my at FlightWorks, where I flew in Afghanistan. If you had an empty leg, you reverted to Part 91.
Absolutely.
Which was
absolutely
awesome, because it allowed us a lot of freedom.
I can do whatever I want.
Whatever I want. Now, also, here's something that I don't know. I'm sure it's it. Now, a lot of military guys won't know this, and some Part 121 guys who are, you know, just do the 121 thing with the heads down and whatever. A lot of other smart corporate dudes who are out there, they know the differences between all this much better than I do, that's for sure.
You can, go ahead.
When I was at Atlas, I actually flew Part 91 because I'm hoping I'm not speaking out of turn about this, because if I recall, we had an empty airplane, and it was a requested contract that we had to fly from point A to point B. So, and I'm pretty sure we operated under 91 regulation for that leg. Now, I could be wrong, and my Atlas and ACMI buddies are going to hammer me, which is fine. I take all comers, and I've earned every dagger and arrow I get. But I will tell you that it is a different world in all of those different spots out there. And that is also something that a lot of guys should be looking at. If you're a young up-and-comer, a guy who's looking to leave the military and earn a job out in the civilian world, there's a bunch of stuff that's out there that can make your, I use the word transition lightly, but your change of lifestyle from being a military pilot to a civilian pilot, there's way more out there than just the 121 world. And I think we need to keep beating that drum, because a lot of guys just don't know about it, or they think it's not for them because they can't make, you know, they can't make 350 grand as a 777 captain, which, by the way, it's going to take you 20 years to get there anyway. Yep. So stop with that idea and start going out there and maybe saying, hey, if I don't want to do that, there's a lot of other stuff. I can go fly for a guy like George. I can go do these other things that are out there. Hell, I can even start my own business doing whatever it is that I'm interested in. And I think this is the kind of stories that if I were on the other end, where I didn't, and maybe I'm motivated thinking about, well, maybe I could do something like that in Wisconsin, you know, or work with George to expand that kind of program. But that's the kind of stuff that gets me excited, hearing that kind of upstart lifestyle that you've gone through. So I think I do have some questions just in regards to, what are a few things that we talked about, discipline and how you prioritize. Now, both of us have families. I've got a younger, less expansive family than yourself right now. Yeah. How do you, any habit patterns or routines? This is a very Tim Ferrissian question.
Yeah.
That you do daily, weekly, monthly, that keep you in line and lockstep? Because you also, a lot of guys are forgetting, I've forgotten already, you have a full-time job in the military.
Oh yeah.
So how is that balancing act? What's your routine? What's your life like day to day to make all this stuff work?
So it's a little less routine at my new unit, because I'm still trying to figure out exactly how my routine's going to go. Granted, I've made a routine. So I'll tell you about a routine when I was RPA, starting up my business and doing that kind of stuff.
Okay,
so
perfect.
Let's say I'm on, for example, day shift. So I inherently work from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So my routine was wake up, take care of the kids, kiss wife goodbye, start driving to work. Drive to work, get to work. What I would do is I would print off anything I needed to read, because we were in a skip. So I couldn't bring my cell phone. I couldn't bring my laptop. I couldn't bring anything with me. So how did I mitigate that? I print off anything in paper and bring that with me and go fly my RPA. So as you know, just like a remote control airplane and a real airplane, there's autopilot, right? So if I'm just transiting somewhere and I have someone else with me, I'd be like, hey, just monitor everything. I'm going to do my numbers calculation, see how I'm doing, and make sure my profit margins are looking good. And then I'd look over, read anything I need to read. Like, for example, if there's anything with FARs that I needed to know and research, I'd look over that. And I'd do that. So you try to have your time lap on top of each other. Yes, I'm doing my day job flying an airplane, but the autopilot's doing that for me. Mm-hmm. So I got someone else to back me up on that. I'd look at that kind of stuff. And then I know somewhere in my day, I always try to find time to work out, because I feel if I stay in shape and stay healthy, it keeps my energy levels high, because I can able to get more work done when I have a high amount of energy. So I always find like hour block or 2 hour block in the day to go to the gym and work out.
Mm.
And then on that time, I'd eat lunch. I'd always do a working lunch. So I'd heat up my lunch and go back into the RPA, and whatever I'm doing, I'd eat while I'm flying and that kind of stuff. And I'd always find a way to try to get some work done while I'm at work too. Whether it's like, okay, I need to call my insurance company because I need to update my insurance because I got a new pilot and I need to put that guy on my insurance.
Sure.
So I'd be like, hey, can I get a 10-15 minute break? I'd go make the phone call to the insurance company, boom, and then I'd go back into work. So when I get home, I try to make it as little as doing stuff at home kind of stuff. And, you know, I work with a wife and that kind of stuff. Fortunately, my kids at the time were going to bed at like 6:37.
Oh, you lucky.
Yeah. Oh, you just wait. Is your sleeping through the night yet?
She sleeps through the night sometimes. Oh, last night she's teething again. She started. It's like another one coming in. But she goes to bed at like 8:30 is about when we can't get her to bed much earlier.
Yeah. Because I tell you what. Kids, your kids do not care about your job.
No.
Like, so I know when I get home, even if I want to try to get some work done, my 3-year-old or 2-year-old at the time is going to want me to throw them in the air and play roller coaster with them and stuff like that. So to be able to get as much stuff done while I'm at work is key. And it's all about setting up that routine. Show up to work, get in the seat, get as much done as I want to see. Go, work out, warm up my lunch, go back in the seat to fly, and eat. Get that 15-minute break to get some more work done. Get back in the seat and fly. All right, I'm done with work. Come home. Now it's family time.
Yeah.
It's a juggle. It's a juggle.
Yeah, I think you've got the juggle down pretty well. I think a lot of us could take some lessons from that. That's a good one. I think it's interesting, too, because the perspective that that a lot of guys have here, you know, reserve guard, Part 121 pilot or whatever, you have a 9 to 5. Let's not comparatively speaking to a 121 guy who may have swaths of time off. And it's, you can dedicate a little bit of your day to go work on your business and still have that family time or whatever it is you like to do. You know, if you're single and you're big into snowmobiling or whatever, you can still go do that and dedicate time. Here it's a lot different. You have that constraint, if you want to call it that. And I think, but what the big takeaway for me is, and I do the same thing, and I've got an ocean crossing, which is what I do primarily.
Yep.
I take some of that time out to dedicate it towards a little bit of work.
Yep.
And that's right. Maybe writing in a notebook. You're still flying, still actively flying, but hey, I know plenty of guys who are reading the paper and I think it's, stay engaged with a little bit of what I'm doing on the pilot network. And then also when I've got my layovers, it's not the layovers like TV wise when we were younger. It's not go out and rage until the 12 hours every single time.
Oh yeah.
Nowadays it's more like, hey, I got to be somewhat productive on these layovers. So maybe I'll go out and have a drink or two, but after that, it's kind of like, hey, I got to get up early, work out, and I want to look at a few things before I move on. If I want to continue growing whatever it is that I'm growing at the time, whether it's TPN or something else. So I totally see exactly what you're saying. And I'm sure a lot of guys can take some solace that they've got to get there too, if they want to move forward in this kind of thing.
Adam, you're so right. It's amazing how 20-something-year-old George has changed at 30-something-year-old George. Is, you know, on TDYs, you're just trying to have fun, right? You're not so much worried. Granted, you still have that type A personality. You're just trying to have fun versus 30-year-old George who goes TDY. It's like, okay, I'll have dinner, maybe a beer or two with the crew, and I'm getting some work done or going to sleep. So the next morning I go to a coffee shop and get some work. I was literally at an exercise 2 weeks ago, and I woke up, had my little notepad, and I was writing down things I need to work on as far as this new business I'm trying to develop. And then also work on, like, okay, these are the things I need to do for my LinkedIn profile to update stuff for QuickJet as well. Like, I'm doing more productive things than I used to when I was 20.
And I think occasionally I still go out and have a fun time. Well, but my TDYs are limited to about once a year. So I try to limit them as much as I can. Cause I've got,
well, you still got to decompress though. And that's like half the battle too. It's like, how do you give your sanity back to you? Cause this stuff will run you into the ground.
And that was my next question. So what, with all the things that we discussed, what is your decompression model? I mean, so everybody's got a different one, right? Some people, the gym is their decompression model.
So I got lucky. And for me, I have buddies who love playing video games. I have buddies who like doing all these other things. me going to the gym. I do not work out with a partner. It's me, my headset, and the gym, and I'd get about an hour of, like, not thinking about anything and just working out. I also try to plan at least a 2 or 3 day trip once a quarter where I, for example, the next trip, me and my son are going up to Klamath Falls, Oregon to go hiking with my best friend from college.
Very cool.
And just get away. I don't bring work with me. It's just me, my son, and my buddy playing around in Klamath Falls, Oregon. And we try to do stuff like that at least once a quarter just to get away from it all and bring yourself back to earth.
Yeah, that we're in the process of, I think, as a new dad, an old dad, you know, being 39, going on 40 here rapidly. I think I can, dude, I totally agree with you. In fact, my wife and I have been talking about it, and that's the next infusion. Now that we've got the first year under our belt, because I don't care what anybody says, you don't have no idea what you're doing.
And chaos.
I'm just happy she's alive, you know?
Yeah.
That's the coolest part of the whole thing.
It's managed chaos.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes unmanaged. But we've got, we're, from now on, there will be, hopefully, at the time that this airs, there's some news about TPN forthcoming, and we're going to be doing some traveling as far as TPN founders and whatever. Good. And I think we're going to tie some business pleasure with the family together for me. But that's something that we're really working on, is that quarterly trip, whether it's a drive for an hour to go to a little town in Wisconsin, or it's a flight wherever as an airline guy, we're going to take advantage of that. And I cannot tell guys enough that you have to have something to decompress, because I've watched, and you've seen it too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
How many guys just hit the wall and that's the end. That's why businesses fail. I think we talked about that 7 out of 10. Maybe that's one of the big reasons, you know, there's too much fun or not enough, and you can have that collapse.
It's a delicate balance. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I think you've got that down, pretty well. So this is something that I've been trying to add in, and everything's a work in progress, right? Life's a work in progress. So I've got a couple other questions. We'll call these, this is the featurette, or the feature of the program I like to call memory items. Yes, it's extremely cheesy, but that's kind of how we do things at the Cloud Network.
Of course.
These are the four questions that I'm going to ask George that he's gotten to look at pretty well in advance, so he may have an answer ready to go, but these are his memory items, what he would tell younger George or other George or pilots that are sitting out there, what he could have done a little bit better, a little bit different, or what he's doing right. But these are the same four questions I try to ask every guest. So the first one, number one, George, if you could tell the rest of the Pilot Network something they should read or learn today to improve their position, whether it's as an aviator, a business man or woman, or just a person, what would be that one thing?
And this is going to sound silly and cheesy, but I read this book called The Five Languages of Love.
And heard of it. Never read it, but I've heard of it.
If I were to, and I wanted to change this because I wanted to talk to, as far as leadership and just half the battle, showing not just my pilots or not just my clients, but just showing them that you care. So if I were to change the words of it, I'd change it to The Five Languages of Showing Someone That You Care About Them. So I try to touch the verbal side of, like, hey, man, thank you so much, and you're an awesome client, or you're a pilot, good job flying the airplane, versus touch, just giving someone a pat on the back saying, dude, good job. There's quality time. Sometimes people just want you to have a beer with them and just be around them and stuff like that. There's these five different ways to show someone that you care about them. And I think that in leadership and your family life with your kids, wife, friends, if you can learn how to connect with people and show them that you care, I think that book is a good way to figure out exactly how to do that with people.
Great. You know what? Maybe I'm going to go read it.
Maybe you will.
Maybe I will. I like that idea. All right. So number two, what's something that you would have told George just starting out, whether it's he was just starting out before he went to start playing football in high school or at the academy or pilot training or the entrepreneurial spirit of starting QuickJet. That is a must do. Something he needs to do then that maybe he didn't do.
If I were to talk to the younger 20-something-year-old version of me, I would say stop looking for a mentor just like you, because no one's going to be just like you. What you need to do is find someone that has a certain aspect of your of their life or the certain way they conduct themselves that you like, and take that piece and use that. Let me give you a good example. I flew with an evaluator, and almost every aspect of him I did not like, except for the way he flew an airplane and the way he taught people. And I said, you know what? He will never be my personal mentor. I want to fly an aircraft and teach people exactly like him. So when it comes to that, and then there's a person and the way he communicates with people, like as far as just his body language and the way he speaks as a military aviator, is like, you know what? Not even a really good pilot, but I want to be able to talk to other people and communicate and connect with people just like him. And take these little pieces of stuff you like about people that makes you who you are and makes you a better person. That's what I would tell myself.
I think we can. What we'll do is we'll call him Franken Mentor. That'll give people maybe people a little visual image of what they can can take away from that. Because that's that's awesome. I wish I would have known that too when I was a little younger. Something that you learn over time, right?
Absolutely.
And then number three. What was the most helpful piece of advice you've ever received?
So the most helpful piece of advice, and I literally, so I read this one and I couldn't narrow it down to one thing. So, and I'm literally, I had to narrow it down to three. So my most helpful piece of advice was when I was a kid, my parents asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And, you know, they expect to hear a doctor or president or something pretty spectacular. So I threw him a curveball and I said, I want to be a janitor. And, you know, they paused for a second and they looked me in the eye and said, you know what, son, you can be a janitor as long as you're the best janitor there ever was. That's what they said to me. So I take that as do what you want to do as long as you're trying to be the best.
Sure.
That's all that matters.
I like it. I like it. And then finally, and this is probably the most difficult of the four. Well, maybe. Depends on who you are. Depends on your creativity setting.
Yeah, here we go.
What's your own memory item? Your last memory item that you want to give to the network out there?
My last memory item that I want to give to the network right now. Ugh, God, this was tough. Memory item. So my thing is I always try to remind myself and remember that I was the college kid with a 1994 Nissan Quest with 240,000 miles on it. If I try not to forget where I come from, because a lot of people in the pilot network and a lot of people that go to fly the airlines and start making pretty decent income level, they kind of forget that there was a lot of hard work, and you didn't start. A lot of us didn't start from that kind of, you know, six-figure income lifestyle that we all grow accustomed to. Mm-hmm. So just let's humble ourselves. And I always use the memory of the fact that I'm a kid that drove a minivan in college, and that's where I come from, and that's my humbleness that keeps me grounded.
So, as a review out there for everybody, number one, it's the five languages of love that's going to help your leadership and communication skill set. Number two, something that old George would have told young George he must do before he started out was build that Franken mentor. Take a piece of each mentor that he had and build the mentor that he wanted instead of just looking at one individual. Most helpful thing or piece of advice he ever received was from his parents saying, hey, you want to be a janitor? That's fine. Be the best damn janitor you can be. No matter what you do, be the best at it that you can be, not comparing yourself to a lot of other people. I wish I would have taken that advice too, especially in pilot training. And then your own memory item was, hey, don't forget where you come from. I think we can all take a little bit of that forward, I know a lot of guys who are really, really good at that. I know a lot of people who are really, really bad at that too.
Yeah.
But I think that taking it where I come from, that always produces the best results because it makes me look forward to where I'm going. It's a little bit clearer of a path. Because I think if you say it the way that you just said it to me and the way I'm hearing it is if I forget where I'm coming from, I'm just going to stop where I'm at. And I might get comfortable and that might not be so good. Comfort's okay, but it can breed a lot of discontent as well. In my personal opinion and in my personal experience, I'm sure you're quite the same. So kind of wrapping up, I have a lot of thanks towards George for a lot of different things. I still remember one night we may have had a cocktail or two. I believe it was at, what's the name of that place? Hat Tricks, right outside. Hat Tricks. Yeah, Hat Tricks in downtown Tampa.
Yeah, buddy.
I think that was the first time I really got a chance to hang out with George outside of the work environment. And I have a lot of respect for a guy who can put it together, serving on active duty continuously and creating a successful business that he enjoys running. And I think this is a great way to start out our side hustle piece of the TPN world. We're going to have a lot more, hopefully, from other, not only business founders, CEOs, but philanthropists, people who are just doing good work outside of what they do on a day-to-day basis. And you may not even be a business owner if you're interested in this kind of stuff. Please shoot us a message. So, George, anything else that you want to add before we wrap it up? And you can tell them where to find you if they're interested in maybe being a client of yours, or if they're interested in what they can do to support your business or support the Pilot Network further as supporting George Moore. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, I get a lot of people asking me how I started my business. And most importantly, like, hey, how do you even buy an airplane and that kind of stuff? So if you have any questions about that, a lot of people reach out to me on LinkedIn. I have my email there. You can also go to my business Facebook page, QuickJet, and just send a message to if you have any questions there. And I'll come back to you very quick and give you any information you need, any questions you have. And if you need my email, just send me a message and bring in those social media backgrounds and I'll get back to you. And hopefully I can help anybody on the TPN because that's what we're here for.
Awesome.
To help each other out.
Awesome. Well, George, thanks again for joining us. We know it can be a little bit of a stress when you got to take time away from the work environment, but man, this is what we're all about. We appreciate it. I'm sure the network appreciates it. And everybody out there, thanks again. Fly safe. Keep the shiny side up and the greasy side kind of lower to the ground. We'll see you next time.
See you. Thank you.